वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 13, text 44. Evam sammohayam vishnam vimohan vishva mohanam. Suyaiva mayajo api sayam eva nimohitaha evam samohayan vishnu vimohan vishwamohana suyaiva maya yad suyaiva maya yad jopi Vamayaya jopi swayameva vimohitaha evam samohayam vishnu vimohan vishwamohana swayaiva mayaya jopi swayameva vimohitaha Evam samahayam vishnu mohan vishwamohanam mayaya hopi mayam eva vimohita evam samahayam vishnu Vimoham Vishwamohanam Sayaivam Mayaya Jopi Samayameva Samohita Samohayam Vishnu Mohanam Evam maya jopi evam vimohanam Ladies Evam samohanam vishnu Vimohan vishwamohanam Evam maya jopi Evam samohitam vishnu Evam vishwamohanam Ayam eva vimohita Word meanings? Evam, in this way, samohayan, wanting to mystify Vishnu, the all-pervading Lord Krishna, vimoham, who can never be mystified, vishwamohanam, but who mystifies the entire universe, Saya by his Brahma's own. Eva indeed Mayaya by mystic power. Jaha Lord Brahma Api even Sayam himself. Eva certainly Vimohitaha was put into bewilderment, became mystified So you have an idea what this verse is about? Somebody's being bewildered by bewildering energy. Translation: thus, because Lord Brahma wanted to mystify the all-pervading Lord Krishna, who can never be mystified, but who, on the contrary, mystifies the entire universe, he himself, Brahma, was put into bewilderment by his own mystic power. It all comes back to you, Prabhus, in the end. Purport: Brahma wanted to bewilder Krishna, who bewilders the entire universe. The whole universe is under Krishna's mystic power, mama maya dritya. But Brahma wanted to mystify him. The result was that Brahma himself was mystified, just as one who wants to kill another may himself be killed. In other words, Brahma was defeated by his own attempt. In a similar position are the scientists and philosophers who want to overcome the mystic power of Krishna. They challenge Krishna, saying, "What is God? We can do this and we can do that." But the more they challenge Krishna in this way, the more they are implicated in suffering. The lesson here is that we should not try to overcome Krishna. Rather, instead of endeavoring to surpass him, we should surrender to him. Sarva dharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Instead of defeating Krishna, Brahma himself was defeated, for he could not understand what Krishna was doing. Since Brahma, the chief person within this universe, was so bewildered, what is to be said of so-called scientists and philosophers? Sarva dharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. We should give up all our tiny efforts to defy the arrangement of Krishna. Instead, whatever arrangements he proposes, we should accept. This is always better, for this will make us happy. The more we try to defeat the arrangement of Krishna, the more we become implicated in Krishna's maya. Daivihi esha gunamayi mama maya dharatyaya. But one who has reached the point of surrendering to the instructions of Krishna, mameva ye prapadyante, is liberated, free from Krishna maya. Mayam etan tarantite. The power of Krishna is just like a government that cannot be overcome. First of all, there are laws, and then there is the police power, and beyond that is military power. Therefore, what is the use of trying to overcome the power of the government? Similarly, what is the use of trying to challenge Krishna? From the next verse, it is clear that Krishna cannot be defeated by any kind of mystic power. If one gets a little power of scientific knowledge, one tries to defy God. But actually, no one is able to bewilder Krishna. When Brahma, the chief person within the universe, tried to bewilder Krishna, he himself was bewildered and astonished. This is the position of the conditioned soul. Brahma wanted to mystify Krishna, but he himself was mystified. The word Vishnum is significant in this verse. Vishnu pervades the entire material world, whereas Brahma merely occupies one subordinate post. Yasyaika nishvashita kalam atavalambya jivanti lova vilaja jagadandanata. Brahma Samhita 548. The word Nata, which refers to Lord Brahma, is plural, because there are innumerable universes and innumerable Brahmas. Brahma is but a tiny force. This was exhibited in Dwarka when Krishna called for Brahma. One day when Brahma came to see Krishna at Dwarka, the doorman at Lord Krishna's door requested him, the doorman at Lord Krishna's request asked, "Which Brahma are you?" Later, when Brahma required inquired from Krishna whether this meant there were more than one Brahma. Krishna smiled and at once called for many Brahmas from many universes. The four-headed Brahma of this universe then saw innumerable other Brahmas coming to see Krishna and offer their respects. Some of them had 10 heads. Some had 20. Some had 100. And some, and don't try to figure this out, had 1,000,000 heads. But Prabhu, how could you talk to them if they had 1,000,000 heads? Upon seeing this wonderful exhibition, the four-headed Brahma became nervous and began to think of himself as no more than a mosquito in the midst of many elephants. Therefore, what can Brahma do to bewilder Krishna? So, this story reminds me of a story which this cloth reminded me of. So I have to show you this cloth. This is the cloth that you wrap up the Bhagavatam, right? Correct? Okay. So there's a nice story. One time, well, back in the old days, if I remember correctly, there were a lot of Bhagavatams. So during Bhagavatam class, there were a lot of devotees had their own Bhagavatams. And some devotees would put them on the floor, and Prabhupada would say, don't put them on the floor. So one devotee thought, I will make a book cover for Prabhupada's Bhagavatam. Because Prabhupada said, don't put it on the floor, but if you have a cloth, it's not on the floor, it's on the cloth. So he hired some of the seamstresses, Didi seamstresses, to make the best ever book cover created in the universe. That was his idea. And he was going to give it to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was going to think, what a good idea, and what a beautiful book cover. And he was going to get special credit. So he was all excited. Had the book cover made. Prabhupada was there in Australia. There was a darshan. He was going to come in, and in the darshan, he was going to offer this, and Prabhupada was going to say, what a beautiful book cover. And this way, he would get praised in front of all the devotees. Good idea? You want to hear the rest of the story? So he had this bag. So Prabhupada knew he wanted to give him something. So Prabhupada said, what do you have in the bag? He said, Prabhupada, I made a book cover for your Bhagavatam because you said don't put the Bhagavatam on the floor. Prabhupada said, I don't put my Bhagavatam on the floor. You put your Bhagavatam on the floor. I don't put my Bhagavatam on the floor. Totally blew him off. I don't need this stupid book cover. I don't put my Bhagavatam on the floor. He was devastated. At that moment, he understood that Prabhupada understood his mood. And just smashed him, just blew him off, just popped his bubble. You put your Bhagavatam on the floor, I don't put mine on the floor. Boop! Bubbles popped. Then he realized the mistake he made. Then he became humble. This is the story he told. He said, at that point, because I understood the mistake, I became humbled by Prabhupada. And I had another gift. And Prabhupada said, what else do you have? And he brought some mangoes. And he brought the mangoes to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, ah, mango. This is the best gift. So now he was pleased with his gift because he had become humble. And there are other stories that devotees tell like this. That if there was some pride in Prabhupada's presence, he would see it. And he would call you on it. He didn't like it because it wasn't good for our bhakti. Just as Krishna doesn't like it In fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said that if any devotee desires to be recognized above others, that desire is evil. Not the desire, he said, the plan, he said, that is an evil plan to manipulate or position yourself in a way that you could get some honor. So that is an evil design. And any time a devotee was in that consciousness in Prabhupada's presence, I don't want to say any time, but often Prabhupada would do something to bring them down, because our position is meant to be down. And just here, Brahma, he also has that problem, so Krishna has to pop his bubble. And any time the bubble needs to be popped, the guru, Prabhupada, your guru, your friends, someone's going to pop it. It needs to be popped, right? In the Bible it says, pride comes before a fall. In this shastra, I think it's in the Manu Samhita or some shastra, it says, he said, the wise man, or maybe it's Buddhism, the wise man thinks himself a fool, and the fool thinks himself a wise man. The more one advances, the more one thinks himself lower. The more one is lower, the more one thinks himself advanced. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur very much stressed this principle of humility and would not tolerate criticism of another devotee. Would not tolerate it. Would not listen to it. Ever. At one time, he said something amazing. He said, one who is a Vaishnava does not find fault with anyone. So now we have a problem. Do we have any Vaishnavas left in the Hare Krishna movement? We've all found fault at some time with somebody. And he said, because a Vaishnava does not find fault with anybody, and the duty of the guru is to find fault, nobody can become guru. The whole guru problem has just been solved. Nobody can become guru. Who's guru, who isn't guru? We don't have to worry. Nobody can become guru. Because it's the service of the guru to find fault. And you can't do it if you're a devotee. What to do? So then he said, somebody has to be a guru. Someone has to do it. Otherwise, the disciplic succession will not continue. Somebody has to do it. So how do we do it? He said, the guru sees my service is to train these disciples. I am their servant, and it is my service to train them. So after this, one devotee was finding fault with another devotee. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I have the thankless task of pointing out the defects in others. I have the thankless task of finding fault with the Vaishnavas. A Vaishnava doesn't find fault, and now I have the service. That's my service. I have to find fault. It's a thankless task. What if your service was to serve meat? Vaishnavas don't serve meat. But what if that was your service? You had to do it. Somehow or other, you had to do it. When Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he entertained some big figures, and he served them meat, some kind of meat. Right? You know that? Yeah. some big, you know, British ministers. He said, I don't know what kind, but he served them. How would you like to have that service? Be the one. He wouldn't want to do it. So Bhakti Siddhanta is saying, my service is to find fault. It's a thankless task. I don't want to do it, but I've accepted that service. Said, you do not have to find fault. I have to do it. I don't want to do it. It's a thankless task. You don't have to do it. Why are you doing it? Is that amazing? Interesting, isn't it? Now, in this purport, there's a reference to the scientists. So I thought maybe I could tell you a little history of ISKCON in regard to the scientist. And then we can develop this theme of pride and being bewildered. Krishna will bewilder us. Pride itself is bewildering. So, 1972, Los Angeles, I was living there. Prabhupada spent, I believe, 3 months there. At that time, Sarup Damodar, I don't know if he was even initiated at that time, he was doing his PhD at a university about 100 kilometers south of Los Angeles. And he was going on morning walks with Prabhupada, and they were talking about science. You've all seen the book, Life Comes from Life. You have that book here? You take it for granted. You just read the book and it's just like, whatever. It's another book, right? It's not like that. On these morning walks, we were there in Los Angeles. Whenever Prabhupada would go on a morning walk, what do you think we would do when they got back? You would ask the devotees, what did he say? Because it wasn't like the next day you had a transcription and everybody could read it. What did Prabhupada say? So what was happening is that before this, up to this time, Prabhupada never talked about the scientists at all. Now, all of a sudden, we're hearing all this, scientist rascal, scientist cheater, scientist this, scientist that, this, that, the next thing, science, bluffing, cheating, bluffing, lying, enemy of civilization, rascals, fools, they don't know anything. We never heard that before. It came out of nowhere. What's going on? Try to put yourself in that situation. We had no idea. Why was this happening? Because Prabhupada had a whole preaching plan. And when someone would step forward who could carry it out, then he would give it to them. And last night I was listening to a morning walk with Sarup Damodar in 1972 with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said to him, he said, they all think I'm crazy, but now that I have you, you can explain it in scientific terms, and this way they can take us seriously. So, I'll give you an example in my life. Before I was a devotee, I was a musician, and I liked to play guitar and sing and write songs. So after I became a devotee, I donated my guitar, I stopped playing, and I just played mridanga, harmonium, kartals, and like that. But in my mind, I had so many ideas of kirtans we could record and distribute because then more people could hear it. But I never did anything because I was just distributing books and temple president and out of the college preaching. And then one fine day, a devotee who knew that I had this desire arranged for an 8-track recorder, a recording engineer, a synthesizer, and a drum programmer. So they said, okay, let's record. Because it just came. There was facility, so now I had the idea. The facility came, so I could do it. Makes sense, right? Maybe you have some preaching idea, but there's nobody to do it. But if somebody joins that can do it. Maybe you have an idea for a movie. I have this fantastic idea for a movie. And then three devotees join from some movie producing college. And you're like, well, they joined. We can do the movie immediately. So it was just like that when Srip Damodar came. It seemed like out of nowhere, Prabhupada's talking about science. He never talked about it before. And we couldn't figure it out. It's because he had a scientist now who he could inspire to take what he was teaching and present it in scientific terms. And then he was talking every day about science. We had to have an istogosi in Los Angeles to figure out why Prabhupada was doing that. We were bewildered. Nobody understood. Only one devotee, Karandar, he was very smart. He understood. So he sat us down and he said, okay, this is what's going on here. Prabhupada's got this idea for preaching. Prabhupada's a revolutionary and he's going to smash everyone and everything that gets in his way. And this is a big thing that's getting in his way. And then he said, Prabhupada is speaking this way because we are all convinced by these scientists. So we all believe them. And if you listen to the morning walk, I was listening to this, I was in Juhu yesterday and we came back late at night, so I had my iPod and I was listening to a morning walk with Srip Damodar. And all the devotees are asking Prabhupada questions as they'd never heard this before. You mean evolution isn't true? They couldn't get it. You take it for granted, right? Oh, evolution is bogus. This was 1972. The devotees were all trained in evolution. They kept asking Prabhupada, so you mean that there wasn't evolution? You mean like higher forms of life were created at the same time as lower forms? It didn't evolve? And Prabhupada said, yes, they're all created simultaneously. They kept asking the same question. Well, was it other planets they were created, like higher beings, and later they came here? Prabhupada said, no. Everybody gets their karma. Out of the body of Mahavishnu, they get their body. Devotees couldn't understand it. It's very interesting to listen to it. You could see how steep they were in evolution. And they kept saying, but Prabhupada, they say that life evolved from a single cell amoeba in a primordial soup, Prabhupada. They say, who are they? Why do you listen to them? We never heard this before. This was all new to us. We were all, you know, we're just like, whatever. We were all just, you know, trained by modern science. And Prabhupada kept having to say, why are you listening to them? They're speculating what happened 50,000 years ago. They don't even know what happened yesterday. They can't even remember what happened yesterday. Then they tell Prabhupada about the dinosaurs. What are these dinosaurs? And they explain everything to Prabhupada. And it just blows them off. So Karandar, he understood. He said, Prabhupada is heavy because we believe all this. Because this is what we were taught. Now, I have to tell you something else. I was very fortunate because in the 1980s, I lived in San Diego, and that is where Sadaputta and Drudakarma lived, and that's where they were writing their book, Forbidden Archaeology. So they talked a lot about it. And we got to hear Sadaputta give class every week. Incredible classes. Nobody gave classes like that. Just stretching our mind to the limit. But one of the things that they did, because of their research and their experience, they enlightened us about how this whole demoniac scientific cover-up works. And they uncovered in their study and also in their personal experience that there was a concerted effort, conscious effort, to propagate the idea that life comes from chemicals. And that the only way you could be employed in an academic or scientific institution was to support that theory. And if you found a fossil or any evidence that would contradict that theory, very quickly you were notified not to publish it. And if you did, you would lose your job. Did you know that? These things are going on. As Prabhupada would say. In today's world, for example, analogous to this, in today's world, there is a lot of scientific research in universities, and hundreds and thousands and millions of dollars are given to research, and many of your countrymen, I know them, they are in America doing their PhDs at prestigious universities, getting grants because they're smart to do research. Who is giving the money? Pharmaceutical companies. Do they want them to find a natural cure for cancer? No way. I put them out of business. They're not giving millions of dollars to find a cure for cancer from, I was just in Guyana and they said that, what, soursop apple or something? They found the soursop, what do they call it here? Sitafol, Romfol? Sitafol. They said that's a anti-cancer. Baking soda, the different anti-cancer. Someone tried to, a European tried to manufacture, take the basic ingredient of that, and they were shut down. There is no money in the United States to fund any kind of cancer research through alternative medicine. $0 and cents. Millions to fund allopathic. Interesting, isn't it? So I was in Los Angeles when Prabhupada, in his inspiration, being inspired by Sarup Damodar, talking about this, made the statement which probably most of you have heard, the scientists are the greatest enemies of modern civilization. And that just like, that was out of nowhere. Which is that like, could you imagine? We'd only been devotees 2 years. 22 years old, what do we know about anything? And Prabhupada says, the greatest enemies of modern civilization. Prabhupada was a revolutionary. Prabhupada did not let anybody get by with anything. He didn't let Gandhi get by. He didn't let Ramakrishna get by. He didn't let Vivekananda get by. Krishnamurti. Nobody got by. And Prabhupada, one morning walk, he said, perhaps I am the only one who has ever challenged all these people. Perhaps I'm the only one. Nice story. Prabhupada said that the Ramakrishna mission practically had to close down during the time of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur because the preaching of the Gaudiya Math was so extensive and so powerful, they couldn't exist. It's like business competition, right? You have a product. Look what Apple did. They destroyed the music industry single-handedly. They changed the whole music industry. You know that? MP3, thousands of songs on a little device this big that changed the entire music, put the whole music industry practically out of business. No longer in America they charge $15 for a CD. Right? How much does it cost to produce a CD? Not much. Of course, it costs money to record. They were charging $15 for CDs. Because of Apple, practically every music store in America closed. They can't sell CDs anymore. People don't buy them. And in India, you buy them because they're so cheap. But they're the one company changed the whole history of the recording, right? So in the same way, the Gaudiya Math, when the Gaudiya Math existed, the Ramakrishna mission, it was like the recording industry. They couldn't do anything. They were completely exposed. Totally exposed. After the demise of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and gradually the breakup of the Gaudiya Math, what happened to the Ramakrishna mission? Became more powerful again. And in one conversation, Prabhupada said, it is the fault, the reason, the fact that the Ramakrishna mission is successful is the fault of the Gaudiya Math. It's their fault. Isn't that interesting? It's their fault. In another conversation, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was speaking to Prabhupada. Yeah, this was early days in the movement, probably 72. And he was having difficulty preaching in Bengal. And he said something to Prabhupada to the effect that the Bengalis, they don't listen. They're not interested. And Prabhupada said, "They're not interested, or you cannot interest them." Threw it right back in his face. They are not interested, or you cannot interest them. In America, there was a killing in a church. Some man, crazy man, just walked in during a service and killed some people. The pastor of that church said something very similar to what Prabhupada said. He said, "It is our fault that this happened. It is our failure to preach successfully. There are people on the street, crazy madmen, who will come into a church and kill people." He said, "It's our failing." Isn't that interesting? So I think that's Prabhupada's mood. Wherever we see materialism, we say, "Oh, it is our failing." Wherever we see science successful, it is our failing. We could not convince. Right? That's how we see ourselves as preachers. To somehow or other expose all the cheating, all the rascals. Just as Krishna is exposing Brahma. That's what Prabhupada did. That's how he trained us. That is Krishna consciousness. Of course, we have to do it in a way in which people will accept it. There's a nice story. I think Hanumat Prasak tells this story. He said they organized, Bhakti Sripadamodar organized one science conference. And the scientists with all their theories and ideas, they're arguing with the devotees. You know, "You have no proof, you have no evidence." The stupid arguments they give. They have no evidence at all. It's simply theoretical knowledge. And in fact, Drudha Karma said it, you can't even call it, there's not enough evidence to even call it a theory. And they were saying, in the higher echelons of cutting-edge science, the scientists don't believe all this stuff. It's just the average people that read popular magazines and read the textbooks, they believe it. They said, they have no evidence for it. So, these people are arguing, debating with the devotees. Then it's time for lunch. Superb prasadam is served. They said, after lunch, nobody was arguing with them anymore. Everybody was very open and submissive and listening to what they had to say. So as I was saying yesterday, it's not just we want to conquer people's brains. We also want to conquer their heart. And there's a saying in America, the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. So we attack on all forces. Right? All sides we attack. If you want to get fired up, I mean really fired up, get all of Prabhupada's morning walks and listen to them, as many as you can, a day for a month, and you'll want to take over the world. Because after you hear those morning walks, you realize Prabhupada came to create a revolution. He was a general. And he was attacking modern civilization everywhere. I once drove 11 hours and I just listened to 11 hours of morning walks. When I got out of the car, I was like ready to conquer the universe. And just, you see, you feel, you understand. Prabhupada's vision to expose, to challenge, to be bold, say we'll stop here and see if there are any questions or comments. Yes. We should not see the faults in others, yeah. Sometimes the faults are very obvious.
Obvious. And although we don't want to see them, it comes in front of us and we get disturbed by it.
Uh-huh.
So how to deal with that?
There's a play, it was done in New Vrindavan. It was a comedy play. So one devotee is finding faults with another. And the devotee says, "You're a fault finder." He said, "I'm not a fault finder. I don't have to find your faults. You hold them up and show them. They're very easy to see." So the question is, when devotees are parading around with a big signboard with all their faults, what do you do? I will tell you a story that could change your life. It's so amazing. One devotee went to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and said, "So-and-so Prabhu is not chanting their rounds, and so-and-so Prabhu is in an important position in the mat." Which reminds me of the story of another Maharaj in ISKCON, who was a GVC and sannyasi, who admitted he could not chant 16 rounds. So everyone was quite concerned what to do. But he relieved our anxiety. He said, "The problem is I can't chant 16 rounds. I can only chant 32 because I can't stop at 16. Because he was getting a taste. So that's a good problem. But this devotee was not chanting any rounds. So it was a big concern in the mat when they came to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Now Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very careful to train his devotees not to find fault. Which is different than being in a position of authority where you may have to point out the faults. We're talking about just amongst ourselves. So he would teach by his example. So in response to the devotees to this devotee, or maybe it was a group of devotees not chanting 16 rounds, he said to this devotee, he said, "Just see how advanced this devotee is. He is fully engaged in Krishna's service. Fully devoted, fully engaged. And he doesn't even chant one round. If I didn't chant my rounds, I would be in total maya. I would not be engaged in Christian service. But his bhakti, he's got so much reserves of bhakti. It's so overflowing. He has so much that even he doesn't chant his rounds, he's still fully engaged in devotional service. What a great devotee he is." That was a kind of 180 degree perspective change, isn't it? Is that amazing? So I was meditating on this, and wherever I go, this question is asked. Guaranteed I'll get this question asked, right? You get this question asked all the time. You have to. Fault finding. So I was thinking, those of you who took the forgiveness workshop, you know we do an exercise where the person you're trying to forgive, you appreciate them. And by doing the exercise, you realize that if you appreciate, there's no room in your heart for fault finding. You know, it's just like you eat dal and rice and you don't mix the sweet rice in. It doesn't go together. So when there's appreciation, it's not the right mood to find fault. They don't go. It's like salt and sweet rice. And when you're fault finding, the appreciation isn't like, how can you appreciate and fault find? It's not the same mood. They don't work together. So I figured this is what we have to do. We have to have an appreciation festival. And so what we'll do, I'm telling everybody to do this. Somebody's got to do this because this is going to be amazing. And you can do it as part of another festival. We should get everyone together and then we should just go up to one another and say something that we appreciate about the other person. Prabhu, I appreciate that you've been in the movement for so many years, or you have this service and you do it steadily. And then all you say, you don't say anything. All you say is, thank you. And now it's your turn. Or you could say, I hope I live up to your appreciation. Then you give your appreciation. And they say, thank you. And you go to the next person. And then some devotee is going to say, but what if there's nothing to appreciate about them? That's the whole point of doing it. What do we appreciate? We appreciate the fact that the devotees could be doing anything they want and they've chosen to serve Krishna. Isn't that enough? What more do you need than that? Right? Why do you need, well, I don't like your glasses, Prabhu. I can't appreciate that you're a devotee. No, that's crazy. When 4 years ago you said something to this other devotee and I didn't think that was nice and I never forgot it. I still hold it against you. That's not what we're talking about. Just appreciate. Thank you so much for serving Srila Prabhupada. And have a big festival and just go person to person. Could you imagine after doing that for a few hours how we'd feel? Oh my God. I think if we do that, people walking down the street are going to feel something's going on here and just kind of be attracted magnetically. I want to tell you why I think like this. It's really interesting. Pay attention. This is very powerful. As teachers, as preachers, this is very powerful. 2 years ago, I did a training. It was kind of a training in counselor, being a counselor. And so, they had an exercise, which they call the serious drill. And what it is when you're counseling someone and somebody gets very, very serious about a problem and they get very, very negative, like, I just can't do this, everything's wrong, like that. What the counselor does is they start appreciating the person. They don't say anything, but they feel appreciation. They just feel intense appreciation for the person. And what happens when your appreciation hits a certain level, it affects them. And we saw this in the exercise. The exercise was actually the person, for example, if Virabhaha Prabhu would play a part and he would just speak negatively. This movement, I'm finished. There's so many problems. What's the use anyway? We're never going to solve it. And he would just talk like that. And I would just listen. And I would just appreciate where he's coming from and just appreciate how he's trying and appreciate. And if you did it, the person would stop talking and they'd say, I can't talk anymore negatively because I can feel your appreciation. And if they didn't feel it, they'd tell you and say, I don't feel anything. Yes. The way I can repeat what you're saying. The way I'm presenting the example.
So the way you're presenting the example now that I hear it, that means that one is listening to offenses.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
So how does that tally with?
Because they'll stop making the offenses.
You're hoping.
But if you do it right.
Okay, so then it could be understood, I appreciate that, that it could be understood then that you're acting in the second way if you can convince the person and the person would not. So that's a way of convincing, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Because there are the three ways of how to react, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like Prajapati and Daksha. Daksha's just yelling and screaming. It was something that generally it wouldn't normally be offensive. It would just be like, person's personal problems. It may be, you can use your judgment. But Sometimes you can take it to that extreme where they'll actually... Sometimes people just... I was with a... Okay, I'll tell you another story. Let me finish this and then I'll answer you. So the exercise was we had to appreciate and the person had to give feedback. Oh, I didn't feel your appreciation or I did. And when they did, they just kind of said, I can't be negative anymore. It was amazing. So we got direct experience of what it's like when we appreciate another person without saying anything and how it affects them. So that's why I was saying if we did a festival like that, maybe the people on the street would feel like, wow, his appreciation's coming out the windows. Now, to answer your second question, which is a very good question, and Virabhaya Prabhu was asking, well, what if you're listening to somebody and they're being offensive, critical, blaspheming, and then you're hearing offenses? I had taken a course on empathic listening, where you learn to listen and just let people talk, and you help them talk by giving them feedback, basically, of what they're saying. And the process of empathic listening is to help the person talk it out themselves. And so this happens sometimes. You have to listen to things which are difficult to listen to. So I was with a person, and he was criticizing another devotee. We were working together. We were together for the whole day. And I had just taken the empathic listening course. And as a teacher of Krishna consciousness, my gut immediate response is, Prabhu, you shouldn't blaspheme. But I had just taken the course so that what I was supposed to do was just, so you feel so-and-so was unfair. Yeah, he was really unfair. I didn't like what he did. So he did this, and that really upset you, and now you feel discouraged. Yeah, I'm really discouraged. You know, that's what I had to do, right? I just did that, and I didn't say anything. The next day, I didn't say anything. Next day, he said, you know, he's a nice devotee, and I really shouldn't criticize him. So to just let him work it out in his mind, just fed back what he was saying. And that's the conclusion he came to. So sometimes that's what we have to do. That people just need, you know, they don't really mean it. They're just upset. And so, now in the course, we teach, it is taught, not we teach, I was taught that sometimes if someone's saying something and it upsets you too much, you just say, I can't listen to this. You just tell them, it's too much for me. But part of what we learn in the course is sometimes if you do listen, most of the time they work it through and they come out on the other side of it. And they needed somebody to listen. Needed someone to understand them. That's all. So you have to use your discretion. And it's not easy. It's not easy to listen to things that are not right.
Hopefully they will not convince you.
It's actually, I read this thing, very interesting, I read this thing, and I think it's so helpful for us in ISKCON. It was in the Indian version of the Fortune 500 magazine, and it had all these businessmen, leading businessmen from around the world, and they're all talking about integrity in business and dharma in business. So I had developed a course called The Enlightened Warrior, The Success Principles of the Bhagavad Gita, and I'm preparing to take it out to the corporate world and teach, you know, how to be successful but use the Gita. And I was staying with this devotee and he said, look at this magazine. And it was like everything I was trying to teach, they were talking about it right in this magazine. You know, if you do what's right, you'll get the result. You know, we have to be dharmic and all this. So, what was my point? Completely forgot. Rewind the tape. Where was I coming from? What was the point before the... Sometimes you have to listen. And then after... No, after that. Sometimes you have to listen. I shouldn't convince you. Oh yeah, yeah. So one of the guys said, do not surround yourself with people who agree with you. Have people that don't agree with you. You need other points of view. Interesting, isn't it? You know, we just want to get, you know, five of us, we all agree, and then, you know, everyone who doesn't agree is, they don't know what's going on, right? We want to get everyone to agree with us. He said it's really healthy to have people that don't agree with you, because it gives you a different perspective. I like that. So sometimes, you know, that's the challenge when you have to listen to people, because they'll say things you don't agree with. So what you're saying is, nobody in ISKCON is qualified to be a guru. You must be really upset that there are gurus, and that's what you have to do. You must be extremely upset that your godbrothers have taken the position of guru. Yeah, I'm upset they're not qualified. They've taken you feel that they've taken over Prabhupada's position. That's what you have to do. Is that easy? Of course not. But sometimes, for some people, if they're just heard, they're satisfied, and then they won't say it again. You know, thank you for listening to me. That's all they want. Sometimes. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. Anyway. So find somebody that doesn't agree with you and ask them what they have to say. Yes?
Talk, we'll have that talk after the class.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gopremanandi, Hari Hari Bol.